Now, an underreported update on the situation of the six healthcare workers in Libya who've been found guilty of deliberately infecting more than 400 children with HIV. Yesterday, the Libyan Supreme Court upheld the death sentences of the five Bulgarian nurses and one Palestinian doctor. We've been following the story of the so-called Libya Six on underreported for nearly a year now. And with me once again with more on the latest developments is Declan Butler, a senior reporter for Nature magazine. He also runs a blog about the Libya Six, which you can access through a link on our show page at WNYC.org. Welcome back, Declan.
Well, hello, Leonard. I'm pleased to be back on your show.
First of all, some background. Do any experts believe that these five nurses and one doctor really infected hundreds of Libyan children with HIV?
No, I mean, this is one of the questions you've got to start out from, is that many people say, how do we know they weren't guilty? And you should ask the question, first of all, you know, how do we know they are guilty? And of course, the point is that there is absolutely no evidence in there that they are guilty, because in fact, the way you would have to prove some kind of causal link between medical staff and infections is actually to do a study that actually tracks who went where in hospital, who had contact with who, etc. Those kind of epidemiological studies were never done. The scientific evidence presented by the Libyan experts to the court, we had them reviewed by external AIDS experts, and they all agreed that it was utter trash, if you like. And if you look in the opposite direction, if you look at the several avenues of scientific evidence proving that they are innocent and that the infections began even before they started working in this hospital, are, you know, would be sufficient in any legal system. They wouldn't even have been charged, like let alone face a death penalty.
Have they confessed?
They confessed back in, remember, they've been in prisons in 1999, and they confessed early on in the trial to a scenario that would have read from a John le Carré spy novel. It was an unbelievable conspiracy theory. And then they retracted those confessions because, in fact, many human rights groups and others consider that those confessions were extracted under torture, which was a common practice at the time in the country.
If listeners want more in-depth background, you can go to our underreported segment from October 19th of last year in our archives and our show page on WNYC.org. Declan, were you surprised that the Libyan Supreme Court upheld the death sentence of the five nurses and one doctor?
Not at all. I've been following behind-the-scenes discussions with the diplomats and the various agencies over the past few weeks, and this has been the more or less the scenario that has been described, and let's hope that the script goes according to plan, because the kind of idea is, this is the solution that has been worked out, is that they would be condemned first of all by the Supreme Court, and then subsequently they would be reviewed by those verdicts would be reviewed by the Supreme Council for the judicial authorities, which is the most high standing judicial body in Libya, and it's a political body, so it has more margin to actually negotiate a solution. And the idea is that on Monday, well, everybody hopes what will happen is that when they meet on Monday, they will either cancel or commute the death sentences, and that the six will be able to return home very soon.
Although there's no guarantee that that will happen. And there have been, we discussed this in the past, there have been suggestions that this is really, that these people are being held as a bargaining chip, and that a lot of money will have to exchange hands, or else certain Libyan prisoners will have to be released from European jails.
I think it's slightly more complicated than that, because you've got to remember that when this happened, first of all, back in 1999, the status of Libya and the international community and its attitude towards the West was very different. So I think what happened was that these nurses and the medic got wrapped up in a kind of unfortunate accident where, in fact, local bureaucrats, etc., tried to shift the blame, and then it got out of control. And therefore, the problem is that then when Libya started turning towards the West a few years later, the problem was that for the past few years it had been telling its people that these people were guilty of a conspiracy, etc. So the Libyan government, actually, I'm quite convinced that parts of the Libyan government are quite really want to find a solution. Now, there's kind of two, to simplify things, there's two kind of currents in the Libyan government. One is the liberal side, which you can identify with Saif el-Gaddafi, the son of Colonel Gaddafi, and that's kind of liberal wing. And he, for example, I'm convinced that he is convinced that this is this was an accidental contamination, that there was never under any conspiracy. And then I think there is a fight with a more conservative wing within the government that would like to see these people executed. So I think there is some internal politics going on here. I think in terms of the international negotiations, I think there is the case that the children, there is a humanitarian case for actually ensuring these children get lifelong health care. It's a lot of children. It was a tragic accident. And it's true that many of the Libyan families worry, for example, that once the spotlight turns away, those children will be forgotten about. So I think there is that key humanitarian aspect of, you know, ensuring the care for the children. And also that Libya here has an opportunity, and I think we've been trying to get this across to scientists who have been speaking to them. There is an opportunity here for Libya to actually face head-on the problem of HIV and diseases in hospital, and perhaps, in fact, turn the situation around and become a leader, if you like, in the region in terms of, you know, promoting proper healthcare. So this could be, that would be a very, very positive outcome and maybe unlikely. But, you know, I think we shouldn't be too cynical, because I do think that there are, I think there are currents in the Libyan government who really know what's going on and would love to see the end of this and would love to see a positive resolution.
I'm talking with Declan Butler, a senior reporter for Nature magazine, who also runs a blog about the Libya Six. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Would the Bulgarian government consider compensating the families of the infected children as a way of settling this case?
The question of compensation has been one that's been very mystified, if you like, because one of the settlements, one of the ways out of this, of course, under Islamic law is that, and this is a clear way out, is that if the families can be compensated for their loss, then under Sharia law, the actual legal bodies next week could consider that as, blood money, and therefore take that into account. So symbolically, this would be a very easy way to get around the problem. Now, where that compensation for the families actually comes from, is it from Europe, is it from Bulgaria, is it from international donors, or is it from Libya itself? That's another question now. But I think the key question is that the families, the compensation of the families is clearly key to getting this resolved because of that loophole in Islamic law, which would actually provide the ideal way out of the situation. But I think it's much less clear as to who would pay for it in the end, or who will pay for it in the end.
Well, hasn't the Bulgarian government said that giving compensation would be an admission of guilt, and these people are not guilty? In fact, the infections occurred in most cases way before they even came to Tripoli.
I think any solution would have to involve, even if there is compensation for the families from some party, I think clearly Bulgaria would never accept directly linking that financing to Bulgaria or the Bulgarian nurses and the Palestinian, because clearly that would be an implication of guilt, which nobody, including human rights organizations, scientists or lawyers, could accept. But actually the principle is, you've got to remember also that what we're talking about here is not a very clear-cut case, that in fact the solution of this problem, the resolution of this problem, I hope to say, is part of a much wider basket. It's a much wider basket of international negotiations involving Libya, involving oil deals, involving, for example, you had the Libyan ambassador. The United States appointed an ambassador to Libya yesterday, the same day as the Supreme Court verdict issued his death penalty. Now, is that kind of political signal, etc., is that all part of the deal? I think we've got to realize that we're talking real politics, diplomacy, and that the final solution is going to be extremely complex. It's not going to be just a question of compensation equals freedom, etc.
Well, you're talking as though you're pretty sure they're going to be freed ultimately, but should the death sentence actually be carried out, how would it be done? Does Libya still execute by firing squad?
Libya executes by firing squad, and while they didn't precise that in the latest verdict, that was the initial verdict, did say that. You're right, of course, that while we are cautiously optimistic that a solution will be found, that the nurses and the medic have now, with the Supreme Court finished, they have no formal legal recourse. They've reached their ultimate appeal. So the actual appeal next week is a political body, and after that they are executable. So, I mean, Libya has been unpredictable in the past. The negotiations have failed in the past, so we have to be cautious that the worst will not happen. And at the same time, I've sensed among diplomats, among politicians over the past few weeks, that there is a cautious optimism that I haven't seen for even 6 months ago, for example.
In talk about the spread of HIV/AIDS, Libya rarely comes up. Is it a big problem in Libya?
Libya is an interesting question because, of course, Libya is a very small country. It's only, 6 million people. And almost 10% of the country are migrant workers. So, for example, its official AIDS total is very, very low. And in general, Muslim countries do have very, very low AIDS totals. But in fact, that completely ignores the fact that 10% of the population from sub-Saharan Africa who will be carrying sub-Saharan level, African levels of HIV, and migrant workers are a particularly vulnerable group. That means that the actual real levels of HIV in Libya and the people going to the hospitals, the people being treated, etc., is much, much higher than the official statistics would suggest, because when we see that 0.0% or whatever of prevalence in Libya, that refers to testing only of the Libyan Islamic population.
Declan, thank you so much for talking with us again. Declan Butler is a senior reporter for Nature magazine, also runs a blog about the Libya Six, and he has given us an underreported update on the situation with the Libya Six. And let's hope that this whole thing ends really soon in a positive way.